Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 153.
This week on the podcast, an important review of Bernie Sanders' long-forgotten folk career.
Baltimore finally has a folk hero, and more importantly, an indictment.
Ben Carson hopes to add a sequel to his hit TV biopic. Cuba Gooding Jr. is probably still available.
And new Bridgegate developments strike at the very moment Chris Christie would have liked to have been announcing for president.
Rick Santorum cannot tolerate your gay marriage due to the fact that it probably caused 9/11, but it's totally cool if Bruce Jenner feels he's a woman. Who's he to judge?
And the biggest boxing match in history pits a domestic violence aficionado against the world's least effective politician.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
You should do that, but we have some late breaking news.
Serious, important stuff.
Yes. Bernie Sanders once had a career, I guess.
He certainly had an album.
As a folk singer.
Here's a clip.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway.
Well, to call him a folk singer maybe is pushing
generous.
It a little bit. Yes. A folk talker. Which is what I've always thought that he was anyway.
So
it's
true.
As you and I said, he's really doing everything exactly as we would expect him to.
He's the most him person out
right.
there.
Uh-huh.
And also this album has every folk song that you would expect it to.
Yeah, it's like a...
It has This Land Is Your Land. It has We Shall Overcome.
Yeah, like
it has Where Have All the Flowers Gone.
It's the American folk songbook.
So true. It was basically he gave them like a list of songs that he wanted to sing that were all the songs that if you have like 60s generation parents you grew up learning.
Right, exactly.
And then, you know, sang them with some help.
What happened is that there was this guy who ran this record label out of Vermont,
right.
basically. And it was recorded in 1987 when Sanders was the mayor of Burlington. And this guy asked him, just thought it was a great idea. He was like, hey, do you want to record this album? Not really thinking that he would say yes, but lo and behold.
Yeah, he called the mayor's office at the time. He didn't know Bernie Sanders.
No.
He calls the mayor's office and just left a message with the secretary. And he got a call back because Bernie wanted a meeting.
Yeah.
And then he got to the meeting and Bernie was like, I was surprised. You know, I mean, Lockwood was like, I was surprised he said yes. And Bernie goes, when I first went to his office, he said, I have to admit, this appeals to my ego.
I'm surprised he has one of those.
Actually,
that's the least Bernie thing that he's ever done. Right.
Apparently, it was one of the best-selling albums of Burlington Records' short
Right. It sold a lot of cassette tapes. Many people think that it was a lot of Republicans buying them as gag gifts.
Right.
But hey.
Listen, what... Sales are sales
that's
in the music biz. Hate sales and love sales. It's like comments on the internet.
That's right.
Hate comments...
You want them. You love them.
Are just...
Send us yours.
More readers.
Right.
That's... Hate comments drive controversy.
Yeah.
Hate buyers, the same.
Yeah.
So in any case, that's probably the most important thing that happened this week is that we learned that.
Yeah.
I
think so, too. That's why we led with it.
And we're going to... We're going to do the rest of the podcast, and then instead of our usual outro music, we're going to play two full Bernie Sanders folk songs.
Yeah, and you can find the whole album on the web.
Right, it's on SoundCloud. We'll put the link on our website as well.
Yeah.
But we're going to play all of This Land Is Your Land and all of We Shall Overcome at the end of this podcast.
Yeah.
So definitely stay tuned for that.
But they're all equally hilarious. So.
I mean, every one of them is everything that you would have possibly hoped. I love how thick his Brooklyn accent is.
It's so good.
It's so good.
You can't listen to it without just like belly laughing because it's just too ridiculous.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Oh,
meanwhile, in Baltimore, things have taken a kind of exciting turn.
Yeah.
The state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, is... like a badass.
Yeah, and that was even the headline on Huffington Post, I think, one day this week.
Was it?
Well, that day, I think it was Baltimore Badass or something like that. And
well,
I'm
a genius, then.
Watched it because
of course.
As I love a good press conference.
My mom was watching it.
Watched the Bernie Sanders press conference earlier in the week.
Yeah.
I did a lot of press conference watching this week.
Yeah.
And she is indeed a badass.
My mom said the same thing.
Obsessed with her.
Yeah, well, she's like an American hero.
Right. Well, and nobody really knew what she was going to do. I mean, she's sort of newly in office. She's one of the youngest state's attorney from, like, a major city. She's 35. She had been, like, an assistant state's attorney, I think, for, like, 5 years or something.
Yeah, and I think
but,
she was
like,
just, like, well-liked. So they were like, well, you can run, I guess. You're the next in line. And then, but, like, no one really knew, like, how this was all going to turn out.
And she really, like, this was considered to be a pretty big bombshell. I mean, like, there's not even going to be a grand jury. She just indicted them.
Which is, I mean, when you think about what the protests have really been about in a lot of these past cases of similar of police officers killing unarmed Black men, it's oftentimes the non-indictment is what gets everyone really riled up.
Yes.
And I think that probably, like all reasonable people, she was like, well, this has to stop. We know that these people, like, she told a long story about what had happened.
She went into great detail. She knew her shit. She really did.
She really knew what had happened.
And she mapped out all of the locations. And, she mapped out all of the times that he supposedly asked
and made for a really help. Good case for the fact that he repeatedly asked for medical attention and that they did not provide it for him.
And you know what? If these officers aren't guilty, you know, maybe we'll find that
exactly
at some point.
We have to have the trial.
That's what happens at trial.
Yeah, that's what the trial is for.
That's when we get to decide that. Because, exactly. Of course, the police union and all sorts of, you know, everybody is, like, really pissed off about this. But then, well, they didn't do anything wrong. Like, I saw the police chief or whatever. It's like, well, then great.
Then we'll find that out. Exactly. Yeah, so she charged all of them with misconduct in office. Yep. She charged the driver of the van with second-degree murder and 3 counts of manslaughter and assault. She charged one of the other officers with manslaughter, assault, and false imprisonment. Two of the officers were charged with just manslaughter and assault, and two of the others were charged with assault and false imprisonment. But but she charged 6 officers.
Yeah.
And really went into detail, like we said, about why these charges were levied, and I think made a good case for the fact that what had happened in that van was not according to police protocol and was not appropriate.
Right. Well, and what I found most powerful about that whole speech, which I think a lot of people were sort of, you know, people who are mad about her doing this are sort of, you know, talking about how it's very, you know, retaliatory against the police and like this and that and the other or whatever. The last thing that she said, like, in this press conference was, like, talking about both, I mean, she's obviously in law enforcement, but both of her parents were on the Baltimore City Police Department. Her grandfather was like one of started the first Black police force in Boston, which is where she grew up. I mean, she comes from a line of police officers, so it's not like she has like some deep-seated hatred for the police force. Like, that's not what she like made it very clear that this was not an indictment on the entire Baltimore police force, like that she like honored the, you know, work that they do and all of that. Like, I mean, she really, just the whole statement itself was like really spot on. I mean, it was really, you know, people were mad. Some people were mad about it, but it was really, to me, it was all things to all people. And it's exactly what the city needed.
And she got like great press.
She did.
Like, she's like a future political star in that.
Totally.
If not nationally. I mean, like, in that area, if not nationally. Like, that was, like, a huge story.
Yeah, it was.
And it did what it was supposed to do.
Totally.
It calmed people down.
Yeah, I mean, there was rioting all the way up until that point. That was fairly recently. And already, we're seeing they're drawing down the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
They lifted
the curfew.
The curfew, which has been since Tuesday. I mean, it literally stopped the bleeding.
And
did everything that it was supposed to do.
No, and this is, I think, good news also for, like, you know, New York had major protests where they had, like, I think 143 arrests and a couple of officers were injured.
Yeah, there were
scuffles.
A lot of arrests. Yeah, in New York.
But they did, like, mass arrests. People are pretty pissed at de Blasio about this because he was sort of like, well, I don't know. Things are fine. And, but, I mean, I think everyone there was still, like, acting out on their frustration about the Eric Garner situation and about what happened in Ferguson. And, like, this was, I think, like, a great sort of, like, you know, this sort of, like, was the first moment that there was a victory for these protesters.
Yes.
In any of these places.
Yeah, totally.
Because it was the first moment where someone was like, well, we should hear the case.
Yes, exactly.
Like, it's crazy to me that what this whole time we've been talking about is whether or not we're going to hear the case for these things.
I know.
You should always hear the case.
Hello?
That's what the cases are for. Like, the indictment thing is to find out whether or not there is a case to hear.
Yes.
In these cases, we've known there's been a case to hear.
Duh.
Police misconduct is always a case to hear.
Yeah.
Especially because we pay for the police. So, like, they work for us.
Right.
So, if there's misconduct, there should always be a case to hear. Like, it's crazy to me this whole time that what we've been talking about is not that juries are, you know, hearing the case and then still ruling against people. Like, it's that juries have decided there's no case.
Right.
Like, this series of events that to any random common observer is, like, obviously a
Hello.
Case.
Yeah.
You know, it's no case.
Yeah.
Like,
nope.
In any case. So, Baltimore...
When there's video evidence
when
of
there's
it.
When there's video evidence of what's going on.
Right.
But yeah. Baltimore is the first city to just take a stand and be like, there is a case here.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, her story proves that because the story is disturbing. And if the story is true, then there is a case. So, in any case, people have been talking about whether this harms Martin O'Malley's presidential.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because he was the mayor of Baltimore before he was the governor of Maryland. And his big story that sort of like got him to be the governor of Maryland, and also that he sort of like likes to tell as part of his sort of like broader story that I think that he's going to want to tell as a presidential candidate, is how he really turned Baltimore around, because Baltimore was very sort of crime ravaged, ravaged shithole. There you go. Before he took office there. And there are a lot of things that he can point to as things that he did turn around, but like this obviously is just not
sort of like what, a black mark on the,
this is not what you want happening, like when your whole story is about turning Baltimore around and then the city is in flames and riots.
Yeah,
like that's just not really what you're looking for as a potential presidential candidate.
And he like rushed back to Baltimore to, which was weird because like maybe he could have just
a lot of
away
people thought that was weird because he was a two-term, you know, governor, and not that you should necessarily like run from anything, but I mean, like, if you're really trying to run for president, I mean, he was in Europe at the time, he was giving speeches, he came back, which I guess sort of like, I'm good for him, but also it's like you've now directly tied yourself to the
situation. It felt a little bit like the time that John McCain went off the presidential trail to solve, what was he solving?
Right, they had to take a break, it was the crash.
It was still like a cheap political shot.
Totally.
That he only did to look presidential.
Right.
And everyone was like, why is John McCain here? Like, why are any of these people in this room right now?
Yeah.
But yeah.
So that'll be interesting. I personally would say that it's more damaging to him that Maryland, being one of the bluest states in the country, he couldn't hand off the governorship
to another Democrat.
Right now, there's a Republican governor there, and it's because his predecessor lost that race. That, to me, is worse for him. He's got a lot of things that he's going to have to overcome.
Being the world's most boring man.
I was going to say, these two things are probably the least of his worries.
No, it's true.
But anyway.
Meanwhile, one... Texas Representative Bill Flores.
Yeah, somebody figured out the riots.
Figured out what the riots
Thank
were about.
God.
Thank God someone solved that.
Because a lot of people have been, you know,
speculating on different things.
Right. But he figured it out, and it's gay marriage.
Obviously.
Duh.
Gay marriage is responsible for so many problems.
Yeah, that's right. So here's the line of reasoning, because he said that...
Well, calling it a line of reasoning is generous.
It's true. Here's how we got there. Right. In his brain, this is what happened. Because he thinks that most of them are due to poverty, which I can get... there
like
with
riots
him,
poverty
of,
does
right.
cause riots from
right.
time to time,
sure, but the reason that there's poverty is because the breakdown of the family, which all goes back to gay marriage.
Now I can see where as a conservative he found himself at the breakdown of the family. What I don't see is how from there he didn't think about incarceration rates or any of the other things that are actually causing family breakdowns in impoverished communities, and went for gay marriage, a thing that impoverished communities are famous for not supporting.
I was going to say, I don't think there was a lot of...
It's not gay marriage in Baltimore.
I was
going to
say, nobody, I would think, who was rioting... was rioting because their family had broken down due to gay marriage. Like, that's just not what was going on with those riots.
Not even a little.
Not remotely.
I'd be shocked to find a single person who was familiar with a gay marriage.
Ditto.
Like, that's a curious... Like, I feel like a lot of the time these Republicans will, like, get halfway to a point, and then instead of getting to the point that they're actually making, they shy away from that point and instead make a logical leap that's,
point.
Like, a crazy point. Because, like, Rand Paul would have gone to a different point here, and he's crazy.
Right.
But Rand Paul would have been, like, incarceration rates. This was an obvious lead-in to an incarceration rates discussion.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going to talk about the breakdown of the family and all these other things, and I would argue that there are different issues than that at play in these situations, obviously, but if that's what you're going to talk about, then that's a perfect lead-in to that discussion.
Yep.
Sure. As a Republican, it makes sense that you would start with broken families and then try to blame black people for being criminals or something. I mean, that's Republicans usually get to that point somewhere. This was a curveball, and I didn't see it coming.
Nope. Exactly.
Meanwhile, speaking of mass incarceration...
Incarceration rates.
Louis Gohmert would be really sad if we cut that out.
Yes. Because he was talking about Clinton's had sort of like her first like real big policy speech this week, which sort of went uncovered, which is actually kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
But it was about crime and incarceration rates. Incarceration
right.
rates, not incarceration ratios.
No.
No.
That's not a type
that's
of
not,
policy.
That's not a thing. No, it's not. Anyway, but so he sort of like went on this like real trip to Crazyville talking about Hillary Clinton and like got bogged down with sort of like things that she's now like running from that she used to agree with
Bill on
in the 90s. It was this like real crazy tangent, because he was like, if you look at Bill Clinton's policies, tough on crime, he was absolutely for traditional biblical type marriage. Okay, here we go.
Those are related points.
And then he said, and so he supported those back then, and she's changed. One thing that is similar, after her husband would victimize women, she would victimize them. I don't know what that means. And here again now, she's still victimizing victims of crime. That's the quote.
Don't know what that means.
No, I actually don't know how we got
from
the point from that
to gay marriage or to marriage and then to victimizing victims.
Yeah.
Victimizing victims is where that took a double negative turn that I was not expecting it to.
No, I know. A lot of curveballs from the GOP this week about this.
It's been a complicated week for them.
It has.
And then he went on to say, for a while we're going to feel sorry for the criminals. Mm. Then crime increases and increases. And then we have a crackdown, and we're going to be tough on crime, and then crime goes down for a while. And we're at the wave where the crime has gone down.
Right.
So he basically believes this is a cyclical thing, and we're going to be sorry if we let all these non-violent offenders out of jail.
Right, we can't do that.
Because then crime goes on, and then we're going to have to arrest them all again, and then we're just going
to
end up back where we started.
We have to re-crackdown, and then...
Who has the energy for all that?
Not Louis Gomert. No, not at all.
You know who else hasn't had the energy for all that is most of Scandinavia, where they don't imprison non-violent offenders, and people don't die.
Yeah,
what life continues going on, being lived.
Scandinavia, great place.
We're going to talk a little bit more about how great it is.
But he also, just to finish up with Louis Gomert really quickly, also mentioned that, you know, a lot of Democrats have been working to get felons the right to vote back.
Yeah.
Which I would...
Argue is their constitutional right?
Yes. And so he implied that maybe Clinton was just attempting to get more felon votes.
Also, this is not the first time I've heard a Republican... claim that issue is about getting votes from felons. Like, there's so many felons that would be getting their votes.
I know. Like,
back.
That's a real constituency.
Like,
that was, like, part of the Obama, like, you know,
strategy, yes.
right?
You know, it's like, if only I could get the felon
if
vote.
If I can get the gays and the women and the African Americans and the felons.
Right.
Then
the
I'll
felons
have,
are
then
really,
I'll have done
where this
it.
Really, where this plan really comes to fruition
yeah,
is the felons.
That's right. Yeah. But speaking of Hillary Clinton, because she did give this speech this week, and somebody pointed this out, and I did not realize this, because she was talking about the you know, incarceration rates and things like that, and this doesn't necessarily have to do anything with that, but she's a big proponent of capital punishment.
Like, not okay.
I did not know that. She didn't used to be.
No.
She, like, came to this. She's devolved on this.
This has been a part of her kind of, like, curious evolution into, like, what I think she sees as, like, an advocate for families and women.
Mm.
You know, it's like how she advocates three strikes laws. Which the Clintons did under their tenure.
Right.
And, I mean, they are sort of, like, responsible for some of the terrible policing and criminal justice reforms.
Well, and we here in California who have a three-strike bill, we just had to amend it because we know that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But the Clintons were one of the major forces behind putting those into effect. And so I feel like she oftentimes couches these, like, crazy pants views in, like, well, we're protecting women and families.
Yeah.
Like, women aren't protected by capital punishment.
No.
That's not a thing.
No.
Families aren't protected by capital punishment.
Yeah.
The state becomes murderers. And like, we stop being protected from being criminals.
Right.
As a state. I mean,
yep.
Mm-hmm. But that's insane. And also unacceptable in this day and age.
Yeah, come on.
Pure unacceptable.
Yeah.
That's like I'm not even going to say that there's a world in which I think she could think that that's a, like, there's no, we're past it.
Yep. I agree.
Certainly
on the left, we're past it. I think as America, we're sadly not past it yet.
But, I think this is one of those things where precedent has sort of ruled. I don't think Americans really care that much about capital punishment, except for the people that want to get rid of it. I think that there is a weird constituency in Texas that just loves killing people.
Sure.
I think there are weird constituencies like those Texans, like, sort of scattered around the country.
Yeah.
I think as an electorate, we probably are over it, but precedent has sort of ruled on this issue for a while.
We just don't know we're over it yet.
We don't know what we're supposed to do in the place of it, so we're just sort of like, you know, there's no way to pass a positive or an active bill on capital punishment where you're like, here's a solution.
Yeah.
Instead, it's just like repealing something where we're like, well, what are we going to do with murderers now?
Yeah.
But, you know, just, it's a cost issue.
Yeah.
It's cheaper to kill people than it is to house them for life.
Yeah,
true. That's not a good enough excuse, though.
Nope, it's
anyway,
not.
Come on, Hillary. Moving on.
Yeah.
Ben Carson announced today that he's announcing tomorrow.
Another official clown car writer.
It's getting better. It's getting better every moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson.
Yeah.
He was speaking to a CBS affiliate station in West Palm Beach and said that he is jumping into the race tomorrow.
Officially.
Officially. He's going to have an event in Detroit where he grew up.
Ken?
I was surprised to find this is his first run for office. Because he's just like constantly everywhere, I assumed that he had...
Right. Well, surgeons aren't often running for political office.
I know. I just like, you know how like Rand Paul is a doctor, but he's not?
Right.
Because he's a politician.
Right.
Like in my mind, Ben Carson was in that camp of people
right,
who
sure.
are like doctors, mm-hmm. but are not like practicing medicine.
Right.
They're just like people with some doctor training.
Nope. That's...
That's not it. He already is pulling ahead of a bunch of people in Iowa, including Rick Santorum, the winner of the last Iowa caucus.
Right.
So that's...
Forgotten Rick Santorum.
Forgotten Rick Santorum.
Yeah.
Poor Rick Santorum. Meanwhile, we learned a little bit more about
his backstory. I didn't know a lot of these things.
This is...
I don't care about any of these things other than the last thing that we're going to tell you in terms of this list of things from
his background. I was just sort of shocked. Well, everyone knows I have a long-standing fascination with conjoined twins, so most of what stuck out to me was one item that we're going to get to.
Yeah.
But his backstory really is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I would say that he has the best backstory of any candidate currently running for president.
Correct.
He grew up in poverty in Detroit, but went to Yale and went to the University of Michigan Medical School.
Yep.
He was the youngest doctor ever to helm a major department at Johns Hopkins when he was appointed to be the director of pediatric neurosurgery at 33.
That's young. I'm older than that now.
Yeah, I know.
Yikes.
Get your shit together.
I know.
In 1987, he became the first surgeon to perform a successful operation to separate conjoined twins that were joined at the head.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it caught me. And
right.
I was like, do I like Ben Carson? I don't know. That sounds fascinating to me.
Sounds like a talented and intelligent person.
It's so
he's
surprising
just,
what
he's
happened.
Just crazy.
Yeah, it's just
is the problem.
Yeah, it's if he had stuck.
Smart people can also be insane.
A lot of geniuses are insane.
Yeah, and
he's one of them. He has a Presidential Medal of Freedom that George Bush gave him in 2008.
Yep.
Then in 2009, there was a TV movie about his life made, starring Cuba Gooding Jr.
That's
where Brent got
one.
Interested.
That's where I got interested. Not until then.
Nope.
I mean, the conjoined twins at the head was... That's a good one.
Yeah, that's...
But it's not having a TV movie about your life starring Cuba Gooding Jr.
No. And...
Nothing is.
We think Cuba Gooding Jr. probably still available.
Yes. So
he's not busy.
Nope.
Mm-mm. So if we need to do round two where Ben Carson leaves the OR and runs for president...
Yeah.
Cuba Gooding Jr. possibly still available to
play
him. I want to remind everyone at this juncture that this is still the Ben Carson who said that Obamacare was the worst thing that has happened to the nation since slavery at the Value Voters Summit in 2013.
Yes.
Just in case you thought we were getting ahead of ourselves and forgetting that Ben Carson
that
is an evil asshole.
We definitely had not.
We can respect that he has a really well-fleshed-out backstory that would make for an exciting TV movie.
That's right.
Which I'm
and
sure
it did. Right.
But
not going to watch it.
I'm not going to watch it.
Not going to find it.
Not going to give them that satisfaction. And I'm not going to forget that he compared Obamacare to slavery either.
No, exactly. All of those things need to be remembered.
But in great presidential news.
Bernie Sanders.
Back to Bernie Sanders.
I mean.
Bernie Sanders is winning at it.
He's doing it.
The
right
man
now.
Raised $1.5 million his first day
His first
running.
Day.
It was 35,000 individual donations that all, I think, total, like, I think the average donation was, like,
it was $43. Yep.
That's more than Cruz, Paul, or Rubio made in their first
on
day.
Their
we
first
don't know
day.
What Hillary made because she didn't say.
She didn't announce
probably
it, right.
because she made a lot of money from evil corporations on her first
right.
day.
She
so
didn't
want to say.
Yeah.
But that's a big haul for somebody who is not accepting
right.
big donations. Like, that...
Well, and he has always said, I heard something that they said that they felt like to run, like, a real, you know, serious campaign that they felt like they were going to need somewhere between, like, $50 and $60 million. And I heard him later in the week say that now they really sort of feel as if they can actually do that.
Yeah.
Now, which
no,
they, you would think they would be able to if they could do $1.5 million in a day. Now, a lot of those people aren't going. I got an email from them after it because I was one of these people.
Yay
me. That they're trying to get those people to... Their big push now is to like those to make those monthly contributions,
right.
which obviously is what you would want. But like, yeah, that's totally
we're talking
huge
about.
News.
That is 35,000 people who saw a campaign that no one has given any chance of winning in the world,
yeah.
and were like, I'm going to give him money anyway.
Yeah,
not just support, not just
yeah.
vague support like, oh, I'd yeah. vote for him in a primary.
Well, and he has said, and of course you, I suppose, have to say this as a person who is running, because, like, you don't enter a race that you're going to declare that you know you're going to lose. But I mean, like,
he said he's going to run a real campaign.
I
think he absolutely should. If there's anything we've learned about Hillary Clinton, it's that anyone, any random, unexpected person running a real campaign has a chance of beating her.
Well, and he is really running the type of campaign that I think that is going to, like, really trouble her, just in the sense that, like, even more than Elizabeth Warren, who I think maybe is a little bit more eloquent in terms of, like, speaking to all people. I think Bernie's a little angrier sometimes, which I respond to really well. But, like, I think that he sort of, you know, he really speaks well against the billionaire class.
Yes.
And, you know, the top 1% of 1%, like, taking 90% of the wealth.
He embodies everything that she has to run from.
And exactly.
Like, I mean, he is, his presence calls her on so many things.
Yeah.
That,
and she's gonna have to, you know, she's gonna have to debate him. Mm-hmm. I would assume she probably would prefer to not. But, I mean, she will have to.
It's just the two of them, so.
Right, exactly.
And he also, today, was on This Week on ABC, and George Stephanopoulos said he can imagine a Republican attack ad that would accuse Sanders of wanting America to look, quote, more like Scandinavia. And Bernie was like, that's right. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, it was good.
He's owning it.
I watched the clip, and it was just, like, very matter of fact. Yeah. He's like, what do you want from me, George Stephanopoulos?
Exactly. Like, that is exactly what I want. Well, he said, what's wrong when you have more income and wealth equality? What's wrong when they have a stronger middle class in many ways than we do, higher minimum wage than we do, and they're stronger on the environment than we do? He's just sort of like, yeah, of course I fucking want that. Are you crazy?
Yeah.
Like,
who wouldn't?
I mean, this is what I think is going to be exciting for socialists in the Bernie Sanders run, is I think that he's not going to have to shy away from his sort of time as running as a socialist or serving as a socialist. I think people are going to be like, are you a socialist? And be like, yeah, I'm a fucking socialist.
And he has also sort of, like, I think there's an important distinction, too, because, like, you know, he often gets called a socialist. He's a democratic socialist, which is a little bit different. Like, he's not necessarily, he's not trying to take over everything. Right, take over everything and, like, make all lands public and, like, every, you know, like, literally, like, you know, do things like that. That's what socialism is, and he is not that. He just basically wants, like, a much, you know,
he wants a big social safety net.
Right, exactly.
He wants... You know, and he wants
He still wants a democracy. He's not trying, you know, like, he's not trying to take that away from us.
Socialist in the context of a democracy is a very different concept than what this sort of Red Scare nonsense that people are constantly pegging him with.
Can we get beyond that, by the way, by now? Like, that's old news, people.
We were not even alive during the Cold War.
No.
The Cold War ended when we were teenagers.
If you're our age and the word socialism still scares you, then you're a fucking idiot.
Exactly.
I'm sorry about it. But, like, that's just reality. Like,
but I think this is going to do for the word socialism what everyone realizing they knew a gay person did for gay marriage.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. And I also think that, you know, we have always said, like, the type of person who is going to have any chance at beating her has to be a movement candidate, which is why we have sort of, like, written off basically every other person
candidate
in the race.
Yeah.
I think he obviously has to do every single thing right. Like, he can't, you know what I mean? Like, it certainly is a long shot. Like, I will say that. But, like, I mean, just, you know, to talk briefly about polling, he's 50 points behind. However, at least in Iowa right now, when you look at, like, when they combine all of the poll numbers from Huffington Post, Clinton's at about 60%, which is huge, obviously. Right. You know, Warren is right behind her at 17%, and she is definitely not running. Sanders is next at 14%. And to me, you just add those two numbers up. And
the Warren people aren't voting for Hillary because they can't vote for Warren.
They're not voting for
Hillary.
They were
voting
for
Warren because they didn't want to vote for Hillary.
Right, exactly. So there he's at 31%. There's also 13% of people who are undecided. And I can guarantee you there is not one person who is undecided about whether they're voting for Hillary Clinton or not. So you've got to at least give a good solid chunk of that to him. Maybe some of them go to O'Malley, maybe whoever, whatever. You know, you can't necessarily give that. He's inching close to 40% now at this point.
Right.
Like, if you're doing this, I realize these are all reaches, but, like, that's, like, within striking distance. And also, like, people, as you and I have always said, are going to realize that they don't like her at a certain point.
They haven't yet. Who starts with all the votes and loses them. That's been her strategy her whole life.
Right.
She starts with all the votes and she slowly chips away at those votes until she doesn't have any anymore.
And she's not liked in Iowa. Lest we forget, she got third place the last time. And she didn't even get second.
And where do they go after Iowa? They go to New Hampshire, the state next to Sanders' stomping ground. Like, he's got as good a shot there as she does. I mean, she doesn't own New Hampshire when he's the senator from Vermont.
No.
So, I mean,
I know everybody thinks that we're delusional.
But here's the thing. We're always fucking right.
We're not. We're right about everything.
We're always right about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Even if Sanders does not win, we are going to be right about the fact that he gives her a real run for her money in Iowa.
If 3 years of doing this podcast, if ever I have wanted to be right about something...
I know. This is the thing that you've most wanted to be right about in the world.
This is...
I feel like one thing that we have been historically good at is identifying where sort of like... Identifying where these trends are heading.
Yeah.
And it is so, like, these things are so obvious to us. And they should be obvious to you. They're only not obvious to people who've been, like, inside the Beltway their whole lives and, like, can't see outside of the, you know, into the world. Like, we always say, the thing that gets Democrats elected is Democrats showing up to the polls. It's not getting swing voters to vote for Democrats. There are enough Democrats to elect Democrats. There are more Democrats than there are Republicans, full stop.
Right.
So, the thing that gets Democrats to the polls, the thing that gets an Obama elected, is excited Democrats. It's not getting Republicans to vote Democratic or getting independents to vote Democratic.
No, screw them.
Screw them. Hillary Clinton still is stuck in this mentality of having to reach for the middle. Bernie Sanders is going to be someone who gets Democrats excited about voting for a Democrat. And when Democrats get excited, they get Democrats elected because they like to vote for, you know, because there's enough of them. There's enough of them to vote for Democrats.
That's right.
It's just like... It only makes sense.
I'm with you.
Trends, guys.
That's right.
And if income inequality really is going to be the defining issue of this campaign, which then it is,
he's your guy.
He's the guy that's going to make all the salient points about it.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. One person who would like to be running for president, but I just don't think
can. I just don't think it's going to happen.
And we have always said that even if he did, it was
a joke.
It was a total joke anyway. Yeah. But Chris Christie is basically... The Bridgegate scandal is basically going to go on beyond when he would be able to... enter the race at this point.
The Bridgegate scandal seems to crop up at all of the wrong moments for him.
Yeah, because the indictments just came through this week, and they indicted
David Weinstein,
pled guilty basically like immediately, and is basically making it his personal mission, it would appear,
to tie Chris Christie
to make sure everyone knows that Chris Christie knew about it, because his lawyers had a press conference this week, like. Mm-hmm. When he said that he was going to be pleading guilty, and they said evidence exists that the governor knew of the lane closures while they were occurring, and they also said there is a lot more that will come out, all of which Wildstein has said that he'd be willing to testify about.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too. Like, you know, Christie tried to use these indictments as proof that he was not involved
because he was not indicted,
which I think... that's what you would do. I mean, I get that move. Like, that's your move. But, yeah. I mean, this is just going to go on.
There's going to be proof that he was involved.
And he also just can't go anywhere without being asked about this. Like, I mean,
federal prosecutors are also going after one of his other friends at Port Authority for a shakedown at United Airlines.
Right.
For trying to shake down United Airlines. So there is yet another one of these scandals brewing.
Well, and where we are going to find out... all of the juiciest details about this is at trial, and that is going to be starting, I think it said, and I don't know if I pulled it, but I think it was starting in August or something for the other people.
The worst possible time.
It's basically...
It's just going to stretch the announcement season. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know when he gets in and avoids having to talk about this every single time he's, like, in front of people.
The answer is never.
Never. I know.
Fortunately for us. Yeah, no.
And if I thought that he didn't have anything to do with it, I would feel bad for him.
But I think he's pretty much definitely involved.
Bingo.
I feel like if there was anyone that I would trust to be, to like angrily cause lane closures on the George Washington Bridge just as a vindictive nonsense move.
Right.
It would be someone as thuggish as Chris Christie.
That's right.
Like, he's like a thug. He's like a mobster.
He is.
Like.
Yeah.
I was not shocked to hear about any of this.
No, me either.
Meanwhile,
more presidential.
I was shocked to hear about this.
Ditto. Oh my god, I saw this yesterday and like immediately showed Lila. We were together at Disneyland yesterday, by the way,
for Brent's birthday.
Right, and I was just doing a cursory check of the news yesterday,
like you do at Disneyland,
and found out that Rick Santorum is really she's cool with the transgender community now.
Yeah, why not?
The man who once said that the gay marriage caused 9/11.
Yeah.
Is now just perfectly
if
accepting.
If Bruce Jenner feels that he's a woman, then we should just respect that. Who is Rick Santorum to judge?
Yeah.
When Bruce Jenner feels that he's a woman.
Yeah, that's not what he does.
That's not
he
him.
He says, I can criticize, and I do, for what people do, for their behavior, but as far as who they are, you have to respect everybody. And these are obviously complex issues for business, for society. And I think we have to look at it in a way that is compassionate and respectful of everyone.
That is, when is he getting into the compassion game? Also, I love that he says complex issues for the business community as his first thing. Like, what does that mean?
I know. Yeah.
These are, it's, what's most concerning here is that the business community might be affected by,
right,
by gays and transsexuals.
Right, exactly. But maybe, like, maybe the businesses are going to be confused about what bathrooms they can go in.
That's, I feel like that's the only potential issue I could foresee.
Being all I can think of.
Like, if you make cupcakes, is it a concern of yours if one of your, if one of your customers doesn't have a clear gender according to you? Like, that,
yeah,
that means nothing. But I love that he's just, like, hopped right over accepting gays and is, like, fine with the transgenders, but, like, gays are still, like, this weird thing he can't
discuss. I said to you the other day what I thought was sort of interesting about this is that, you know, Bruce Jenner is changing sexes, but he is still sort of considers himself straight, I guess. But
so maybe
he's still, you know, I mean, he had marriages that procreated, so maybe that's where Rick Santorum is, like, getting on board. Yeah. But, you know, and Diane Sawyer sort of got into the semantics of that because he's, you know, going to be a woman. Is he, if he's then attracted to women,
is he a lesbian?
Gay? And they sort of, like, you know, kind of talked
didn't,
about
they
that,
didn't
but
answer
it was like,
it
wasn't, and I would say that it doesn't matter sort of, like, what term you attach to that
no,
at the time.
I would
but
say
I mean,
that
like,
it would matter to Rick Santorum.
Well, it would. And that's what's interesting to me about this. It's like, I don't know. I don't know how he got to this position.
And I don't know how, like, he stays in this position.
It's certainly not because he just decided to be compassionate. Because that's...
No. That's not him.
That's not him. That's not who he is.
That's not our pink sweater vest friend, Rick Santorum.
It is not.
In any case, there's also been some interesting shifts in campaign fundraising so far.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, actually.
Which hopefully can lead to fewer annoying fundraisers happening in
LA
that will fucking close roads and cause
traffic
mayhem
and
make it impossible for a person to get home from work.
Right, because that's the only reason that the Democrats come here. It's,
yeah,
just,
it's just
to
for
get
money.
A bunch of money. And apparently what is happening is that, you know, since Citizens United, now the big power players are the people who are going to give your super PAC zillions of dollars, basically. So, like, you
so
go after...
So, bundlers are kind of out.
Right, so Hillary Clinton, as a, you know, person who's going to take money from any old place she can get it, is going to go, and she's going to go talk to George Soros. She's going to go talk to
Tom Steyer,
to Michael Bloomberg, to any of those people who are basically going to write an endless amount of
checks. Single-handedly. They're going to be her,
you know
Foster Freeze.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and the Republicans obviously are sort of
they
who started
this
trend. I mean, let's not, you know, Hillary Clinton is not by herself.
She's not a trailblazer in this regard.
No, she's not. Exactly. But, you know, they used to come out here and get money from, like you said, all of these bundlers, people who are basically in charge of getting the $2,700.
Right. George,
like,
Clooney
as many...
throws a fundraiser at his house where everybody donates the maximum amount that an individual can donate.
Directly to a campaign, not to a super PAC, because
there's
no laws for that. Right, exactly. So you invite 1,000 people to, like, some hoity-toity dinner, and they all have to pay
$2,700,
and you've made, you know, $270,000 all of a sudden just, like, by having people come and have dinner,
basically.
And that is, like, becoming less of a thing, and so now that's, like, you know, people aren't happy. Well, I mean, some of the people aren't happy about it because they're no longer getting the sort of... That also used to get you access.
Right.
Like, you could become a friend of the Clintons or a friend of, you know, insert politician's name here by doing something like that, and now you don't. And, you know, you've got these bundlers who are basically, like, saying that they haven't even heard from the Clintons. You know, people who gave them massive amounts of money in the 90s, you know, are not sort of, like, on their radar any longer because they're not important anymore because they can't write, you know, a $5 million check.
No. I wonder if this ultimately comes back to bite her in the form of them also supporting other campaigns. Because I think part of it is that people are very ambivalent, in Hollywood at least, about this campaign. Like, there are sort of the big players that are super Hillary people, like the Katzenberg,
those
people are going to be Hillary supporters because they're establishment people. But
there was some drama in Hollywood because some of them jumped ship to Obama in 2008 and she got really pissed, and there was, like, a big... That was a thing.
That was a thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and the Clintons are vindictive, we know that. So
yeah.
I don't see them getting over that thing. But I mean, I feel
they
like...
They also are people who need money.
That's true.
From anyone.
Yeah, they're not afraid to be your friend if they need money.
Right, exactly.
No, but I mean, I think that could potentially kind of, like... I think that the discussion in Hollywood is not as one-sided as people would like it would like to believe that it is,
yeah.
and that there is sort of like some dissension about whether Hillary is the right, because yeah. this just seems like something that it's such a no-brainer to be like, well, why do we have to support this, the one can't, like, why is she yeah. like crowned herself queen of the Democratic Party, like
right.
that, I mean, that's discussion that you hear all the time. So I mean,
one thing I do want to point out really quickly is that one of the people who is sort of really still like in her camp and are longtime friends of the Clintons who have like been bundlers for them and are close with them and got access by getting all of this money for them are two people named Haim, I guess.
I think it's probably Haim.
Haim Saban, and his wife, Cheryl. And they are the Power Rangers magnets, mm-hmm. if you will. That's the
they
magnet
own
was the term.
Power them. Rangers.
Yeah.
That's.
She's got Power Rangers money. Anyway, not important, but an
but,
interesting
but yet
detail.
So important.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Meanwhile, this Iran deal in the Senate is really
oh
taking
my
a turn.
God. Yes.
First of all, so okay. When Mitch McConnell takes over the Senate, He decided that one of the ways he was going to stick it to Harry Reid was he's mm-hmm. going on about how he was going to allow amendments.
Allow
on
amendments.
Bills. Because Harry Reid was always having to shut down amendments because everyone was always suggesting such nonsense,
ridiculous
crazy town,
amendments
ridiculous
to
amendments
like basically hold up bills.
That would
like
hold
not...
up bills where it would be like a bill to like fund nursery school and they'd be like, not if the carrot community doesn't get its, you know, like, I mean, it would just be like completely random, unrelated yeah. things where, well, yeah. we're not if we have, we're going to repeal Obamacare in a bill that's about, you know, funding the potato community or like
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
So he was always shutting down amendment processes.
Right.
Mitch McConnell promises that he's going to allow votes on amendments.
That's right.
His big thing.
That's right.
Then the Iran deal comes up.
Right. And this is the deal that basically like allows the Senate to approve the deal with,
the
Iran,
deal with Iran
that Obama and John Kerry are sort of like working on.
Bob Corker worked it out. He had some amendments in mind that he was thinking of. But then idiot heads Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio.
The biggest idiot head, Tom Cotton. I mean, Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio
genius,
is an idiot
Tom
head,
Cotton
but Tom
is,
Cotton is
at least
is
in terms
the
of Iran,
idiot head.
He is the
he's
the
idiot
leading
head
idiot.
In charge. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Decided that they were going to file their own totally bad faith, ridiculous amendment that no one wanted.
Yeah.
That was going to require Iran to recognize Israel as part of the nuclear deal.
Ah, sure.
That just torpedoes the whole deal. P.S. Like,
right.
everyone knows that that is not as a non-starter.
Right.
And, like, not important. Like,
right.
whatever. But so in any case, now Mitch McConnell is in a situation where he's basically going to have to invoke cloture because he doesn't want to have a vote on this ridiculous amendment.
Right.
But then he looks like the guy that shut down the amendment process that he was so busy advocating for to begin with.
So good.
And so now he's in a pickle.
Yeah, Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio just fucked Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
Big time.
Which means they fucked themselves.
Right.
P.S.
Yeah.
Like, don't be... And, like, everyone is sort of pissed about it because it's, like, the kind of amendment that you, like, think to yourself if you're Tom Cotton, I'm sure. And Marco Rubio, that is,
right.
sure. Let's attach a ridiculous, horrible amendment that'll torpedo this entire thing.
Yeah.
But then you're like, you know what? We need to cooperate a little bit because we need our own things to pass, too. Like,
right.
we need to be able to introduce bills that will pass and get, like, actually get a vote ourselves.
Yeah.
So, like, what can we do to be, like, more cooperative and still get something that we want, but not just
yeah.
make dumb political statements
this
that no one cares
that.
About? This is not that.
No.
So, Bob Corker is pissed because he had amendments that he wanted to propose that are now going to get shut down as part of this process.
Yep.
Mitch McConnell is pissed because now everything relies on him. Like,
yep.
whether or not this deal passes is all just, like, a decision that he has to make now by himself, basically.
Right.
I'm pissed because Mitch McConnell shouldn't be in charge of making any decisions, as far as I'm concerned.
No, I know.
Certainly not alone.
And anybody who makes me feel sort of bad for Mitch McConnell, I don't like that
I don't
that
like
either.
Them. No.
No.
So I'm real
that's
pissed
a,
at Tom Cotton.
That's a feeling that I don't want to have.
Nope. So Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio are just, like, fucking out of control.
Yeah.
That's...
They are.
Need to slow their roll.
Yeah. They're like the new... They're like the new John McCain and Lindsey Graham.
So true. They're like a new, more damaging, crazier version of John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And I do mean that. They are crazier than John McCain and Lindsey Graham.
That's right. I bet John McCain and Lindsey Graham are probably not too happy about this.
No, I bet they're real pissed.
Yeah.
They would be. And if there's anyone who hates Iran, it's John McCain.
Oh, I know.
And Lindsey Graham. The two of them.
Yeah.
The two of them probably both hate Iran and want this to happen. They would want to put something like this in the bill and thought to themselves, you know what?
No.
This doesn't make sense. This is not a politically expedient move.
No.
But Tom Cotton doesn't have that thought process. He's never once thought to himself, is this politically expedient?
No.
It's not a thought that passes
nope.
through his mind. He's just like, do I want to make this crazy statement? Sure do. I'm just going to go for it.
That's right.
I'm not going to let them stop me.
Now, oh, boy.
New ways that states are planning to undermine Obamacare.
Right.
This is sort of genius. And I think it plays
is,
really well into the
genius in a very nefarious
way. A nefarious that, genius. Right. But it's sort of similar to that story that we told about Rick Scott wanting Medicare money or wanting Medicaid money, but then not wanting the Medicaid money.
Right. So he sued because Obama took away some funding
and something right. about something. You know, we told you the story a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Now
you remember it.
You remember
it. We can't be bothered.
We can't be bothered to re-explain it to you because it was complicated. The moral of the story was that he wanted the money without it being attached to Obamacare.
Right, exactly.
He wanted money.
He wanted Obamacare, but he didn't want to say that he took Obamacare
money. He wanted money for public health care.
Right, exactly.
Where he could take right. money and not say that it was
right.
Obamacare.
Right, so all Republicans are thinking, hey, you know what would be great?
Is
if we had a lot of money to take care of this whole Medicare situation exactly. and like get some more people on insurance in our state right now. The problem is that they also don't want Obamacare money. They right. want money, but they don't want Obamacare money.
No.
Right. So what they have decided to do...
is something only Republicans could think
right,
of.
Is that they are going to accept the money... but they are going to tie giving it to anyone to a work program.
This is a famous thing they tried to do with welfare programs.
Yes.
And it was a terrible disaster.
Right.
Because the one thing that you can't figure out, you can't find a job while you're working for the state at your job that doesn't even pay a living wage on welfare.
That's right.
Just as if you, like the whole point of Obamacare was to give people who didn't have a job access to healthcare.
That's the thing. I mean,
we
like,
had a system in which people with jobs had healthcare.
Had healthcare, right.
And people without jobs yeah. or without full-time work did not have healthcare.
Obamacare as a bill was designed
to prevent this very situation.
To provide all people health insurance.
Right.
Yes, some people have to pay for it.
Right.
Which you and I don't love. But its whole point.
Its whole point was that everyone gets health insurance.
Correct.
Not yes. that everyone gets an indentured servant contract in order right. to get the health insurance that is supposed to be provided.
Right,
by.
Exactly. So this is sort of like a non-starter, and it's just no. really ridiculous. But
and the Obama administration has been like, no.
No, that's not happening. But the other thing that's, you know, is important to note is that, you know, most Medicaid recipients already work, like
yeah.
57% of them. And like, according to like this recent Kaiser Family Foundation study, of those who don't work, a third say that they're taking care of a home or family
right.
member, so they're at home, and 20% of them are either looking for work, and 17% of them were mentally ill or disabled.
Right.
And that
this is a
equals,
program for the
right.
very poor and the
right.
the men and the disabled.
And so that when you add all of that up, that's not much lower than the national labor force participation, which is 63%
right.
anyway. So it's like all of these people who would be on Medicaid are sort of. It's the same
this
amount
is,
of people who are working anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, it just doesn't,
this
it
is,
doesn't add
by the
up.
Way,
it's like a fuzzy math situation.
57%
like,
of these people are working and qualify for Medicaid, which means 57% of these people
right,
are making so little at their
jobs. That's
a
living wage problem is what
yeah,
that is.
Yeah, exactly. That they are having to go on public assistance.
Right.
That is the problem right there.
Right, exactly.
The problem is not that people aren't working.
So
this
maybe,
is never, I mean, that's never
maybe
been
we
problem.
Should just let them tie it to this because
right.
it's like if all the people already have a job anyway, then like they're going to get to keep it in the first
right.
place. Right.
It's just like, this is like their newest plan to dismantle the
yeah.
the basis of Obamacare.
Right. Well, it's just like one of those dumb things where like they think, oh, this is just going to be a great idea. And it's, I think also what this does is it just gives them cover to take
yes.
the money is what it
totally.
Does.
Totally.
You know, it's like, it's also like that thing where they were like, you know, tying, getting drug tests to welfare. And
yes.
then a few states passed it and realized like 0.03% of people
were
like actually
using drugs. To become part of the 9/11
health
program, you have to be checked against the terrorist watch list.
Right. I mean, it's like...
like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's just so many things that they are up to like
yeah.
this that are all
yeah,
equally
this is,
ridiculous.
And so this is just like a douchey move that they're making to be douches,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. That's
which
all
is
it
a
is.
Thing that they're...
Yeah.
And that's their move.
Yeah, speaking of douchebags...
Yeah. Sam Brownback.
Sam Brownback,
one of the
bigger ones.
Right.
Like, king of the douchebags.
Top-notch douchebag.
Yeah, exactly. So he went out to dinner this week and got a tip. Didn't get to leave a tip, but he
right.
received a tip back.
From the waitress.
From the waitress. Because the waitress brought him his bill and crossed off the line for the tip, so he couldn't write anything. And on the receipt said,
tip the schools.
Which is like... yes!
Amazing.
Like, she is winning at
she's,
life, this
yeah,
waitress, basically.
She's a winner.
Yeah, because this is in reference to the tens of millions of dollars he's cutting from the education budget right now. I think it was something like $40 million, because they have this $350 million budget shortfall.
Because they cut
because
all
they,
the taxes.
Basically, they have no revenue
right.
in Kansas.
And because
the state
Sam
is taking
Brownback
in not a dime.
Is a math not understander, and Kansas was dumb enough to re-elect him after
right.
all the non-understanding of math that he did.
That's right. So,
A, what a douche. B, that waitress is an American hero.
That's right.
She deserves a Medal of Honor.
That's right.
And a tip. Yeah, she deserves a tip from everyone else.
That's right.
I'm sure there's some sort of online campaign already to give her the tip that she didn't want from...
Yeah.
If there's not, there should be, by the way, Kansas listeners, if you're out there.
That's right. Now we're entering our random silly news portion of the podcast, as if that last bit of news wasn't also silly. The same.
But I mean, make sure to stay tuned for the Bernie Sanders song coming up later. So don't
stay tuned
us now.
For this,
too, is the best part of the podcast.
Because these are great stories. They just don't have anything to do with news, really. So if you're looking for news right now, then you've come to the wrong place.
Well, no, here's some important news.
Yeah.
There's a state of emergency in Iowa.
Bird flu.
What?
That's it.
Bird flu?
Bird flu.
Where is it around
it's,
Iowa, too?
Like,
or is
so
it just
bad
in
that
Iowa?
It's a state of emergency? Like, I mean... Sure.
Oh my
okay.
God. I was in Asia during the bird flu epidemic, and there was one day where I really did have to eat a chicken.
Oh no!
Because
you had to eat the chicken.
Well, I was in this small town in rural Vietnam. We were the first white people to ever visit this small town, so they made us a
really
a
rolled
meal.
Out the chicken red carpet for you.
Well, so they made us a meal that consisted of things that they eat over there, which included intestines and hearts and tripe and all these things that we were like. That were kind of gummy and flavorless and didn't taste very good. And then just like a chicken in a bowl with a tiny bit of broth. It was just like a chicken that was the same size as the bowl that it was in with the feet still attached and like a little broth on it.
Nope.
And we were all like, we're going to have to eat this chicken. So we all just sort of like slowly ate the chicken and hoped we wouldn't die of bird flu.
Well, you didn't.
And we didn't. So we made it through. But... Bird flu is serious stuff, guys. It was not fun to be in Vietnam while bird flu was going on.
Yikes. It's probably not fun to be in Iowa while bird flu is going
on. No, thank God it's not pork flu.
Oh, God. Can you imagine?
It would be a nightmare.
A total disaster.
Brent taught me something yesterday, which is that pork is officially red meat.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think they consider, like, mammals...
Like, all mammals red meat.
Red meat, yeah.
I can see why
because
that would
I
be
had
the
a
case.
Pork chop yesterday.
Right.
And that was the first red meat that I'd eaten in... Almost a month.
He's going fake vegetarian.
I'm decided sort of like mostly pescatarian.
Right.
But like, I'm not being militant about it. But it's for the environment. I'm doing it for the environment. So
it's good for him.
Congratulations to me.
Right.
But anyway, I had a pork chop last night because the restaurant at Disney has a really good pork chop. And
you know what? It was your birthday.
I was hell-bent on eating it, and it was my birthday, and it was delicious. But I said... This is the first red meat that I've had in like a month. And
the whole table was like, nope.
No, I think
except
somebody...
for Galen.
Galen came to my defense.
The two Iowans at the table knew.
And he's also on paleo, so
he knows
all
too much.
He knows a lot about his proteins.
Right.
That one, Galen. But anyway, so yeah.
Yeah.
Pork flu would be bad.
That would be a real tragedy.
Disaster.
If pork and corn flu hit, it would be the end of Iowa, period,
as
we know it.
Yeah.
Or as anyone knows it. It would just be the end of Iowa.
Yeah.
Meanwhile... We have a new royal baby.
Mm-hmm.
This caught me totally unaware. I wasn't aware that we were expecting a new royal baby.
Oh, I wasn't either.
So.
The only way that I actually learned about this is because I was celebrating my birthday yesterday with Lauren, our friend, and it was her actual birthday yesterday, and she was really honked off that the royal baby got born yesterday because everybody was, you know, of course, really focused on the royal baby birthday and not
right, and
not
less
hers.
On hers.
I feel like those are two different sets of people who
you
would have been excited about
that. But I don't,
that.
Who knows?
But anyway, that's how I found out.
Right.
It's a girl. They haven't named it yet. That's all the new speculation because that's apparently a really long process. Like when you have a royal baby, you can't just
naming a
royal have it and then just like
decide
just
that your name is Apple
name.
And then move on.
No, you can't. You certainly can't do that.
Thank God.
No. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
so,
she's like fourth in line because the girls can now be directly
that's exciting.
In line, which is sort of fun. But also, come on.
Really?
Don't
care about this.
Just stop caring.
For
about
a lot
this.
Of reasons, one of those reasons being that we're not British.
Well, that's the reason.
This was I would argue that even the British should not be caring about this at this point, because this is literally just like a family living off the dole.
Well, the British often say that we are as or more
obsessed I think
about
we are.
These things than, and I think it's probably
well,
just
love
because
celebrity
we don't
culture.
Live it. We love celebrity culture, and we also sort of like don't.
Our tax dollars aren't supporting them, so what do we care?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But, I feel like the British oftentimes, who are, like, at least activist-y British, are sort of like, we should not be encouraging this sort of, like, archaic nonsense.
Yeah.
And Americans just, like, love the reality show aspects of all this.
Totally.
We're, like, obsessed with the royal family.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just, like, they are actual welfare queens.
Totally.
That is, like, they're the actual welfare queens. The figurative welfare queens that we constantly reference aren't real.
Right.
There are no actual welfare queens in America. These are actual welfare queens and kings.
That's right.
Welfare royalty in general.
Yeah.
In any case. And then there was that boxing match, and everyone was talking about it so much, and I don't understand how we all got so excited. It's sometimes there are sports matches. Like, it was the day, like, I think the Kings made it into some sort of, like, hockey playoff, and suddenly everyone was obsessed with hockey, and I was like, when did we all start watching hockey? I'm a person who spends a good part of the week in a ice rink, and I certainly don't care about hockey. Right. And, like, every time the World Cup happens, suddenly everyone's a big soccer aficionado. Right. And I'm always like, really? Did we all follow soccer before? No.
No.
So I feel like this caught me unawares in the same way where I was like, we're boxing fans now? Yeah. We're paying $100 to get a pay-per-view boxing match?
Yeah, it was the highest pay-per-view dollar amount to watch this fight ever in the history of pay-per-view.
That's crazy, Tim.
Yeah, totally crazy. And also, I feel like there was some talk about this, and it was good that there was a little bit about it, but, like...
Not enough.
Because these are two known fucking assholes. Yeah. Like, and I mean that in a very...
He means that in the way.
...serious way.
Yeah.
Because Floyd Mayweather, who ended up winning, and who is probably going to go down as one of the greatest boxers in history, he's undefeated. He only has one more match, I think, later in the summer, and he's basically, like, said that he's, you know, going to retire at that point, has 7 domestic assault charges with 5 different women. This is a man who...
He's a wife beater.
He's a woman beater. Right, yeah, I don't know if he was married to them or not, but I mean, like, that's his thing.
He's hitting women. He's an assault artist.
That's right. Yeah.
That's not a heroic move.
No, it's not at all.
That's not someone we should be celebrating.
No. And Manny Pacquiao is a congressperson in the Philippines, and he showed up last year 4 days of work, which is almost as many as Ted Cruz showed up for.
Somebody Ted Cruz can really identify
right,
with.
Right, exactly. But it's probably good that he isn't showing up much, because he's also terrible.
He's a wacko conservative.
Like, you know, he's Catholic, which I suppose most of the Philippines is. But, like, I mean, he's very, you know, anti-birth control. Like, really just, and he's sort of talked a lot about these things, like, very publicly, as I suppose you would as a politician. And granted.
Good thing he's only showing up for work 4 days a week.
Granted, the Philippines are probably behind us on those issues, so, like, on some level, like, okay, but still, I mean, it's...
Also not someone to celebrate.
No.
Not someone spreading a kind of hate that we're over.
Right, exactly. So we had the, you know, woman beater and the, you know...
Ineffective politician.
And woman hater.
Woman hater, exactly, right, yeah.
Basically, yeah. So,
yeah. That was it. So that's what we paid $100 each to...
The woman beater.
One. As you would expect.
Yeah, sure. He's a good fighter. Right. Okay?
And he's a man who can't help but fight.
That's right.
Whereas...
He really embodies being a boxer.
Yeah, exactly.
In every aspect of his life.
That's right. So...
Oh, boy.
In any case...
Oh, God, the Kentucky Derby... Kentucky Derby was yesterday, too. You know what happened at the Kentucky Derby that was boring? Is that the person who everyone knew was going to win won.
That's never a good sign.
Don't even
wake me.
I know. No, don't.
Let
I know.
Me sleep.
Oh, wake me when it's
wake
over.
Wake me when it's not just over, but the next morning.
Yeah, right.
I was once in Kentucky for the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, my.
That was exciting.
Did you wear a fun hat?
No, of course not. And here's a question. Did we discuss last week how Bernie Sanders has a brother? I don't think we did.
No, we didn't.
Bernie Sanders has a brother who's running for parliament in England.
For the Green Party. The whole family is just heroic.
A heroic family.
Yeah.
Yeah. The two of them, just two guys from Brooklyn, just running according to their principles for office, year and abroad, near and far, doesn't matter.
Right.
But so, keep that in mind as we play you out with the delightful sounds of Bernie Sanders vocal stylings of Bernie Sanders singing some of our American folk classics. Have a good
week. Enjoy.
Bye.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream Water.
I roamed and rambled, I followed my footsteps from the sparkling sands of your diamond desert.
In many ways, the world in which we're living today is an extremely depressing place. It's hard to deny that, and it's wrong to deny that. War, starvation, the degradation of our environment, people being manipulated and lulled into a stupor by the mass media, consumerism, the futile striving for happiness by earning more and more money to buy more and more things. And on it goes. But if we become depressed, overwhelmed by the obstacles in front of us in creating a world of sanity, of joy, of compassion, then we become part of the problem, another obstacle that others who are prepared to be socially and politically active will have to overcome. During the 1960s, when Martin Luther King Jr. and the people in the civil rights movement stood up to the bigots and the power structure who were denying Americans their basic human rights, they sang a song on marches, on picket lines, and in the jailhouses. A song which became a symbol of hope, a belief that one day we shall overcome, and that on this earth there will be peace, there will be justice, there will be human brotherhood.